It's a trap!
Hello and welcome to episode number 60 of Radio TCX,
your weekly source for X-Wing news and strategy.
I'm Tim Dugan.
And I'm Carson Ray.
Fantasy Flight has started a series of articles titled X-Wing 101, intended to help introduce new players to the game of X-Wing by calling on some famous X-Wing players to help design lists with a budget of $101.
And as the game has grown, this has become more and more of a daunting task. Competitive lists really use upgrade cards from a wide array of expansions. So it's really nice to have these articles where you can get pinpoint paths for purchasing just the right kits to build a pretty decent squad.
In their most recent article in the X-Wing 101 series, Fantasy Flight called on World's runner-up and Minnesota player Kevin Lines to design a squad, and he opted to call on some of his favorite ships in coming up with a list for new players to try out.
Yeah, and so we were lucky enough to have Kevin on to go over his article and talk about the list he built, as well as, with Worlds quickly approaching, pick his brain a bit, see what his thoughts were on what the Rebel team was doing for Worlds this year.
So here we go. Here's our interview with Kevin Lines. All right, so we have Kevin Lines on the line right now. Kevin, how are you doing?
Doing good. How are you guys doing?
Oh, good. We're really happy to have you in the studio again.
So I thought we'd start off by focusing on the article that just came out. X-Wing 101. Fantasy Flight has done a couple of these. They pulled some big names from X-Wing. You're the most recent one. And you focused in, as we would expect, on the K-Wing. Clearly, you've got still a vested interest in that ship.
It could be one of my favorite ships ever. Yeah.
So for people who haven't read the article, the premise, what they've been doing with these articles, we had the world champion Nan Torfs write one. We had Zach Bunn from Team Covenant write one. They call them X-Wing 101. Basically, you're given an allowance of $101, and they task you with designing a list that would be both fun and fairly competitive, which is actually a pretty tall order given the number of expansions you have to buy to get a lot of the common upgrades and ship cards.
Yeah, that was one of the most difficult parts, was sitting down and going, okay, what are all the upgrades that I get in these expansions, and trying to piece together not necessarily the optimal build, but one that is pretty strong with what you're given.
Yeah, a functional list that you could probably bring to a tournament night.
Right.
Right, and you can look at these lists and definitely see where you can make upgrades if you wanted to spend more, but they're definitely a great starting point.
Yep, and that was kind of the big focus, was what can we do to, A, give people a really interesting list, or at least my goal, I should say, is give people a really interesting list that they can start to learn on, but then, kind of like I talked about in the article, give them room to grow as a player while not having to necessarily change their list. That was something that I really felt people were looking for, because I remember when I was learning the game, it was, okay, I've made a list and it's decent. Now, like, what do I do to get better? What's the next step? And eventually that just involves creating a new list, which in this instance, you could probably still just fly that same list and get a really strong grasp of more advanced mechanics of the game.
I definitely think so. I think there's definitely a lot of nuance in what you picked. I would say, though, are you kind of setting them up for long-term failure if you give them two turret ships to start out with? Kind of missing the big skill of the game, right?
Well, yes, that does take some of the aspects of the game away that I really do like, which is small base ships and having to worry about arcs. But at the same time, what's your biggest fear as a new player? You're worried about hitting rocks.
No, it's definitely more fun to be able to shoot. You're right.
Yeah, I mean, it just helps, because then you start to take more risks, like, oh, can I maybe fit that? And, you know, you're able to do that. But I think practicing the slam will really help people quickly learn what a ship can do and how it can move. And then when they've realized what a really maneuverable ship looks like and feels like, when they go to the other ships, they start to realize, oh, I'm not that maneuverable. And they start to feel each ship is different. And that was another big thing that I tried to really emphasize with my little graph of, like, here's where an A-Wing can go, and here's all the places a K-Wing can go.
Well, and I think you're touching on something really important for new players, where I think there's a temptation when you're new at a game like this, or any competitive game, where you try to net deck or pull a deck or lists for the game from an internet source thinking, oh, this will allow me to win at an event. But all these games require skill, whether it's Magic, any other card game, or X-Wing. X-Wing, the most important thing is not really the list you bring. That's very important, but it's knowing how the ships maneuver and being confident when you set those dials. And I think that's something the list you presented does well, because it's got a lot of good tools there for people to learn. You've got both a large and a small base ship, which function differently even when they perform the same maneuver. You've got a large base, it's got one hards, you've got the slam action on the K-Wing, so you really have to teach someone to be confident about what they're doing. Okay, I perform my maneuver, now I'm going to use this slam action, and hopefully this will clear and allow me to drop the bomb, because if I bump, I'm stuck with my decision there.
Well, and I also think that Rey is sort of the perfect learning ship, because, especially with the Fin crew, you definitely get the reward for getting ships in arc. Okay, you get the extra die and the rerolls. But if you get out positioned, you still get to roll some dice.
Yep, and you get to feel what it's like. Oh, I don't have arc. I don't get all my tricks. That's what it feels like. Oh, crap.
So, Kevin, real quick, could you just go over the list for anybody who hasn't read the article?
Sure. The list was Rey with Wired, Finn, Hotshot Co-Pilot, Burnout Slam, Smuggling Compartments, and the new Sloop Falcon title. A Warden K-Wing, so the PS2, with Advanced Slam, Extra Munitions, Connor Net, TLT, Bombardier, Ion Bombs, and Plasma Torpedoes.
Right, so that's not even that different than how you loaded out your Miranda during Worlds. You just had a Homing Missile and Sabine were the only different cards.
And it was Miranda.
Yep, Miranda instead of the two.
But you can't really fit Miranda with Rey that well.
No, you can't. And my whole thought, too, was, hey, I can't afford point-wise Miranda. So what I'll do is I'll teach people how to block and bomb at a lower PS, which is where technically you want to be when you're trying to use action bombs.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a lot easier when you don't have to think about what maneuvers your opponents are doing that could mess up your bombing path.
It makes it a little easier to learn the slam because your opponent's ship is where it's going to be when you maneuver. So you set your maneuver, you perform it, so you can try to measure out where that slam is going to put you and make that bomb land.
Exactly. And just like with my Miranda, I still have an extra piece of ordnance that's there to help make people pay for if they chase Rey.
So in designing this list, what were some of the struggles of that $101 limitation? Were there any upgrade cards you really wanted to include? I think Sabine seems like an obvious choice.
Yeah, Sabine was definitely one I wanted to have on there, but I couldn't afford. I also wanted to have a different crew card, but I was kind of limited by my options because the K-Wing pack doesn't have any crew cards that you want to use. The core set literally doesn't have any crew cards that I can think of.
Well, you definitely used Bombardier before Sabine came out.
I did. When I first started the Core Miranda stuff, I used Bombardier on Miranda before Sabine came out. And that was really surprisingly effective.
Right. Well, when you go through all those different ranges of where you can drop the bomb, Bombardier just adds a whole nother level there. Okay, now we can send it one further back, right?
Yeah.
So that opens you up to even more bombing options.
Yep, and I remember the first game that I played was against Cody Frechette running Rack Whisper, and I was able to counter net a decloaking Whisper because of that extra one range. And then at the end, I killed his Whisper with a seismic charge because of that extra one range. So immediately in that first game, I was amazed at how effective I could be as a bomb placement. And I remember the night before that store championship, I was practicing at home just to see how far. And you can, if I remember it correctly, you can almost go range 3 behind your K-Wing with an actionless bomb before you move, which that's really, really far. If no one has put that on the table before, that's really insane. And being able to drop that at PS8 is crazy.
And you give some illustrations comparing the K-Wing and the A-Wing, both the slam action on the K-Wing and the boost action on the A-Wing, showing just the potential of where those ships can go and just how amazingly far the K-Wing can go when it's moving quickly. What I really like in this article, though, are the two main examples you give. You give one where you're positioning these two ships against a stressed TIE interceptor and teaching people how to anticipate what your opponent's going to do and how to set up your bombing run for that. I think that's a really good illustration, especially for new players to kind of understand some of the core concepts of the game about predicting what your opponent's going to do.
Right. And the way it's written, it's very much in the frame of like a chess or bridge puzzle. Here's the problem you're presented with. How do you come up with the solution? And then you eloquently walk us through those steps.
Yep, that's exactly the way I wanted to present it. It's very similar. I mean, I remember when I first started playing, I learned a lot by watching Paul Heaver's games and reading articles. And Paul did some really good articles on blocking. And I kind of just channeled some of that. I even referenced it in my article, that channeling that blocking aspect and applying that to how you plan bombing. And then at the end, showing, here's all the cool things you can do with bombs. And then here's the trick that I added in the list with Bombardier that was not a possibility before, but it ends up creating the best situation for you to be in and be the most protected.
Well, the way Paul presented it was that you're trying to figure out what your opponent's ideal maneuver or maneuvers are. And when he was talking about it for the sake of blocking, it was to get in the way of those ideal maneuvers. In this case, you're figuring out what that ideal maneuver is so you can set up the bomb by blasting past that location and dropping it behind you,
while keeping yourself safe.
So when you find yourself in these situations in real gameplay where you're in the planning phase, you think you have an opportunity to drop a bomb, how do you parse out where you predict your opponent's going? What are the things you look at to give you an edge on what maneuvers they are more likely to take?
It's always circumstantial, but in general, it's where do I need to be this turn versus next turn? What are the moves that would be the most advantageous to him? Kind of like the Paul Heaver approaches. What is the best move from their perspective they could make? And with how I play Miranda is a little different, but with the K-Wing in general, one of my best pieces of advice is, don't necessarily play for this turn. Sometimes you have to give up this turn to play for next turn or two turns down the road, which that's a more advanced concept. But with how you play kind of a long game with the K-Wing, just in general, you have to be very patient. And I think that is a skill that you have to learn over time, but that really, really good players have is being able to be patient. But the best advice I can give is figure out what their best move is, what their worst moves are, and what is the best move for you, even if that means not even doing anything this turn and totally disengaging.
So in your article, I'm pulling a quote here. You say maneuvering is the game's key skill, which I think I can agree with. If you were talking to a new player or an intermediate player, what would you say are the other essential skills to playing X-Wing and succeeding?
I would say, to poke Ryan Farmer a little bit, math is important because you have to make decisions on, should I or should I not spend this focus or evade token? Should I or should or not take this risk?
Right. Your choices during the combat phase are very much, where am I getting the most efficiency?
Right. But it's even in the maneuvering phase. You know, is it worth me going and taking this shot? You know, they always say the best green dice ever rolled are not rolling green dice at all. But sometimes the risk is worth taking. And being able to evaluate that is another humongous skill in the game. And the last big skill that I think people sometimes struggle with, because now there's so many cards in the game, is understanding how the other list operates and what your opponent's optimal situations are.
Yeah, and definitely if you are not actively playing a lot of games against various opponents, this is something that's very difficult to keep on top of. As the game expands, there's just more and more nuanced mechanics that if you don't play against them, you're not going to really grasp how they fully operate on the table. And even some old ones come back and you're like, wait a second, how does this work again?
Well, and understanding how your opponent's list works is going to cascade and affect every other part of your game. Carson, when we did our episode about the three phases of an X-Wing game, we're making a lot of comparisons to chess, but we talked about rock placement and how one player in the game of X-Wing, there's two players, one player wants the rocks to be involved more than the other person does. And it's up to you when you're choosing who gets initiative first, or you're choosing where to place that first rock of yours, to decide, okay, do I want the rocks to be more involved or do I not want them to be involved? And that's all based on you knowing what your opponent's list is capable of doing and what they're going to try and do.
All right, so now let's turn that question on Kevin. You show up with a bombing K-Wing. How often do you think you're the person who wants rocks to be more involved in the game?
I would say, as a player in general, I always want rocks to be involved in the game. But as a K-Wing player, I want rocks to be more involved in the game than any other list type ever, because it's the best denial of area that you can ever use is by taking the largest rocks and denying the most area so that all the moves they could take, by just saying, nope, there's a rock there, you literally cannot go there.
Right, and that allows your bombs, like you don't even have to hit them with their bomb, you just can close out the lane and they're going to go through it.
Right, or you could just bluff them, like, oh, it looks like I'm going to drop a bomb here, so I'm going to make you play differently, not even intending to use a bomb, but your opponent doesn't know that.
So, Kevin, you'd say then the three essential skills you're looking at here that you're recommending new players is maneuvering. It's the most fundamental part of the game. So you want to understand how your maneuvers look on the board. Risk assessment, risk management, knowing, okay, do I want to put myself in this position or do I want to spend this token now if it's the combat phase? And then the last one is knowing your opponent's list, having a good understanding of what they're trying to accomplish, which allows you to better understand what you need to do.
I would say that hits it pretty good.
Hey guys, just time for a quick Patreon update. We've actually finally been able to place another order for our Radio TCX Target Locks. I know a lot of you guys have supported the show for the past couple months, and we were really upset that we couldn't get these out to you sooner. We will hopefully have these done within the next few weeks. I will post updates on Facebook and Twitter, letting you guys know when the tokens are finally ready to ship out, and we're going to try and get those out to you as soon as we possibly can. We really appreciate your patience and your ongoing support for the show.
And for our monthly patrons, we're going to be announcing this month's raffle winners. We have the alternate art Darth Vader pilot, the Disco Vader pose, and we also have the Imperial Raider extended art from Worlds 2015. Quite a big prize. These are pretty rare.
Yeah, so we've got our two raffle winners right now. Winning the Darth Vader promo, we have Seth Miersma. Congratulations, Seth, on winning your promo. And then winning that big prize, the Raider Epic promo from 2015 Worlds, we have Mike Nordell. Congratulations, Mike. We'll hopefully get those shipped out to you in the next week or so.
Thank you to all of our patrons. And if you want to be eligible for next month's raffle, please go on to patreon.com/radiotcx and become a supporter of the show today.
All right, Kevin. So we want to talk about like the elephant in the room. We've got Worlds coming up here in just a few weeks, less than a month now until we have the second world championship in 6 months, thanks to the new tournament schedule. We want to just get your thoughts. Me and Carson are okay X-Wing players, but we thought we'd bring a real expert onto the show to share some thoughts, particularly what you're thinking Rebels are going to bring to this upcoming world championship.
Thanks, Tim. I think you're undervaluing your guys' abilities just a little bit.
You know what, Kevin? We're okay in any regular matchup, even regionals. We're fine. But when it comes to the Worlds, we're just okay then. You know, we need an expert.
Okay, so we're going to talk about Rebels, huh? Did you know that faction existed before the FAQ?
Yeah, it's still a two-faction game, right?
I heard stories about it back in the day.
Scum and something else, right?
That's right. Scum, something else.
Obviously, the FAQ had a huge impact because almost all of the big FAQ changes affected Scum and Villainy and affected Imperials. There wasn't really much in the way of hurting anything Rebels had because they didn't have a whole lot to offer. What are you thinking right now are the clear kind of champions of the Rebel faction? What ships are you favoring?
Well, we've seen Paul again go back to Rebels and pull out a list and win again. And then the same list won Hoth.
Three-time world champion, Paul Heger.
Yep, three-time world champion. I think everybody knows you're going to see Biggs come back. You're going to see Miranda. You're going to see the stress bot. Just this last weekend, we got to see two ARCs and a T-70 Jess Pava win the Steel Open.
Yeah, ARCs are decent. I've always been surprised by... I mean, we've been on the show talking about how bad they are, and then they keep doing well.
I'm changing my tune on them, definitely. Well, I started changing my tune on them several weeks ago, before they were really becoming popular. That rear arc matters a lot. Like, I would never account for that when I was looking at the ship. Like, I was always thinking of it more in line with, like, an X-Wing. But that rear arc matters a whole lot, especially with that title.
Yeah, those free crits on the title are pretty nice.
So I originally thought the same thing. I played against the Gunner stress bot, and I was like, okay, whatever. I get it. It's a gimmick, whatever. But after seeing kind of where the game's going with the rear arcs and all the turrets that are in the game, like Miranda and Rey, and just kind of like the jousting lists, like even the Fen lists, they make a pass and then they leave, want to turn around. And you get in that situation where if you want to fight Rebels, you kind of have to joust. And the weakest moment for Rebels with jousting is the turn when you have to turn around. You're either not shooting or you're stressed and you don't have any actions. And after seeing the Steel Open and seeing Hoth and some of the stuff that's been going on, like with Nathan's list, I started to really reevaluate the arc, and maybe I was underscoring its value a little bit. And now that we saw the FAQ come out, it's changed the game to a point where those two attack dice, or if it's range one, the three attack dice with the title can contribute. And we're noticing a change towards higher hit point lists that don't just go boom. And the arcs are surprisingly durable with 9 hit points.
Yeah, the difference from 8 to 9 is very noticeable.
Yeah, it is. Absolutely.
So I think definitely with Rebels, you're still seeing the high hit point trend. We're probably not seeing that many of like A-wings, even E-wings, leaning more towards arcs, Y-wings, K-wings.
Yep, you're seeing the shift from, I guess you could say, high agility to high hit points to beef. Because, I mean, what are a lot of lists that are being run right now? You're seeing Fenrau in a lot of lists. You're seeing Asajj. You're seeing a lot of three-ship lists. You're seeing a little bit of Ordnance. But with ships that have 8 or 9 health, you're going to get maybe 4 to 5 attacks it takes to kill that ship. And that's just going to improve your odds statistically.
Now, that brings up a good point. You're saying a low incidence of Ordnance right now. Biggs is becoming very popular. We saw him in both of the lists at the top table at the Hoth System Open. Don't you think a rise in having Biggs Darklighter out there who's drawing fire away from other ships is going to lead to an increase in Ordnance perhaps at Worlds?
I think it will. It's either going to lead to a rise in Ordnance or it's going to lead to a rise in turrets. Turrets just to arc dodge and continue shooting, and eventually he'll grind down. Or Ordnance to just flat out ignore him. Yeah, I do think we are going to see Imperialists specifically that are higher pilot skill and loaded with Ordnance to just blow up whatever he's protecting, like Miranda. I really think we're going to see a lot of lists geared to just kill Miranda because she's the rebel ship right now. And if she's next to Biggs, then you need a way to not have to wait to kill her.
So the rebels have their high hit point ships, Biggs, Stress Hog, Miranda. But they also have the regen. We have, again, Miranda, and then any R2-D2 carrier, Corrin, Poe, Nora. Where do you think the Rebels are in regen? What, if you had to pick two regen ships to bring, which ones?
So, Miranda, you have to bring Miranda. Like, if you're going to play just one regen ship, you have to bring Miranda.
Is that because she has that survivability threshold with the 9 hit points of...
It's a combination of survivability, versatility, and her just flat-out potential to do things that Rebels struggle against, or to destroy things that Rebels struggle against. Like, Fenrau can be a problem. Even if he's stressed, he can still be a problem. But Miranda can answer him really effectively with bombs. Miranda's just, if you're going to pick one regenerator, Miranda's probably your go-to ship. As much as I love Corrin, I think right now it's really hard to run Corrin. I think Ordnance is really going to, even with Biggs, Ordnance is going to push Corrin away a little bit. Poe is in a unique spot because he's kind of been ignored for the last 6 months, maybe more. I think we might see some creativity like we did with the BB-8 Nora list this last weekend at the Steel Open. Maybe some creativity with Poe. But Miranda's the easiest to do because the builds have all kind of been proven. I mean, between Paul and my list, we've kind of shown, like, here's how you run Miranda and here's how you load her out. You can kind of just look at that and say, all right, we'll just copy that and go. I don't really have to change much.
Yeah, she's been thoroughly tested. So I think, yeah, it's pretty safe to say people have kind of settled down on what are the strong characteristics of that ship and the loadouts you'd put on it.
Yeah, thanks for that one.
Anytime.
So, Kevin, we reached out to our listeners on Facebook and Twitter and told them we were talking to you and if they had any questions for you. So I've got a whole slew of questions here from people on Facebook and Twitter. So I'm just going to run through these, and you can just fire off whatever answers come to mind, if that's cool.
Sounds good.
All right, so first off, we've got from Isaac Carter. He asks, how many practice games do you do before taking a squad to a competitive event?
Well, if I was to answer for Hoth, I would only say 6 or 7, which is not enough. Honestly, I think the best way to gauge it is identify 4 to 5 likely matchups or matchups that you think you will struggle against and play them at least 5 times to the point where you feel you have either multiple setups or you have a couple good strategies on how to beat that list and you can reliably beat it. When you've come to that point, then you're good to go. But in general, there's not a set number, but a level of comfort so that you can say, all right, if I face this archetype or that archetype, I have more than one game plan and I know what I need to do to win. And if you can answer that for most of what you think you'll be facing, then you're in a comfortable spot. If you're not, then I would say you probably need to play more games.
Do you have a goal number for your Worlds prep this year?
Well, last year I had the convenience of basically playing the same list all year long, which was really awesome. This year, I still have it down to two lists. I still don't know which one, but I still think I'm going to set a goal of at least 30, 35 games before I feel comfortable and ready for Worlds.
All right, from Nathan Wilcock, who's better, Corin or Miranda?
I'm always going to say Corin, but it depends on the meta, to be honest.
Who would you say is better right now?
Right now, technically, it's Miranda. I mean, I'm actually, spoiler alert, not going to be flying Corin at Worlds, and it makes me really sad. But because of where the game is right now, it's really, really difficult to run Corin, and it's much easier to run Miranda. Although I still think it can be dangerous to run Miranda if people are gearing up like I think they will be for Worlds.
Oh, I'm gearing up for Miranda. Don't you worry.
But don't worry, Carson. Store championships, Corin's coming right back out.
That's fine.
Jake Ream asks, what would you do to help increase faction identity for each of the three factions?
Well, boy, that's a good question, Jake. I think the first thing we have to do is identify what is it that identifies each faction, or what is the designers what is it that you resonate with when you look at a faction? So like when I look at Rebels, I look at hit points and regeneration. That's kind of like the pillar of Rebels. When I look at Imperials, I look at aces and I look at high agility / defenses as the pillar of Imperials. And when I look at Scum, it's just rule breaking and high offense, in my opinion. So how would you increase it?
Break more rules.
That is dangerous. But yes, you could break rules.
Don't let it bleed over so much, because we start to see upgrades appear that kind of bleed into the identity of a different faction. And right. If that happens too much, suddenly those other factions start to become kind of irrelevant.
Yeah, for example, I would say like regeneration, yes, Scum has Gonk, but I would be careful giving any other forms of regeneration to anyone else but Rebels, because that's, I mean, let's be honest, in the last, let's see, Paul won with Han with R2-D2, he won with Poe with R2-D2, technically Nan won with Gonk, so the last three final tables have all had R2-D2 in them, or regeneration of some sort, so obviously regen is super powerful. I also think they need to give Imperials, I'm actually saying Imperials need something. I think Imperials need something that will help them reward better flying. I feel like right now they can outfly their opponents and not be rewarded for it. Kind of like Fen Rao, if Fen Rao outflies his opponents, he is rewarded for it with his title and with five dice. Imperials don't really have that.
Right. I mean, Auto Thrusters was a step in that direction, right?
Yeah, it was.
But that's not Imperials only.
Right, but a lot of ships needed it. Like, the A-Wing without Auto Thrusters was terrible, and now it's still arguably not that good.
Well, and, like, Vader doesn't see a lot of play because, yes, he can outmaneuver everybody, but he's still going to die from whatever shot comes back.
Right, and there's a lot of ways now where, like, four dice is just not enough, which is kind of crazy. I mean, Vader can get the range one money shot, get four hits, and Fen gets all focuses and takes no damage. So I want to see, like, so here's a good card. Outmaneuver was, in theory, a great card to reward better play. But it costs too much, and it's hard to use, whatever.
And the ships that want to use it typically need, like, push the limit or something. So it's already taking up an elite pilot talent slot, so it's a hard sell there.
Yep, and I think Imperials need something to help with that. I don't know what the answer is, but I think that's what they need. And Scum needs other ways to help compete without a Jumpmaster. They need a lift to their small base ships, but not the Protectorates, because the Protectorates are already the best small base ship they have.
So Keith Teklitz asked, what ships do you love to fly in a non-competitive match?
I love A-Wings. A-Wings are probably my favorite ship. I started playing the game with A-Wings. I just love how they move. I love how fast they are. If not A-Wings, I also started the game with B-Wings. I really like B-Wings. Like, my first list was two X-Wings and a B-Wing. Those are my two favorite ships to fly. As weird as that sounds, I actually enjoy flying a B-Wing, and I really love flying an A-Wing.
Kay and Farlander is, like, some of the most fun you can have. It's just a shame that he dies so quick now.
I think there's a real subtle grace to flying a B-Wing.
There is.
Not many maneuver options, but that barrel roll action, I think, is just enough.
Well, the first list that I ever took to a tournament was our regionals a couple of years ago. And that was in wave 3. And I was running an Aptisum with push the limit and advanced sensors. That's a real, an engine upgrade. That's a really mobile B-wing. And it was really fun to fly. That ship had a lot of options and it could do a lot of different things.
Well, I just love the advanced, like the 2K turn's not great on the B-wing, but when you have advanced sensors and a barrel roll, and even then you had a boost, like suddenly yeah. that 2K seems amazing.
It's so dynamic. And people were, at that time, that was crazy. That was like Soon Tier, beyond Soon Tier levels of maneuverability. And they're like, really, that's a B-wing. And you still had your rerolls because you were stressed at the end if you did it in certain times. It's so cool.
John Tomaszewski asks, who was your most memorable opponent last year?
I think it was Ben Lee from Europe. He was running Fen Rao, Old T, and Manaru. Like, he was such a cool guy. And, like, I even told him on stream right before we started playing that he sounds just like Fen Rao. Because the episode of Rebels that I watched that morning in the hotel room that aired the night before, Fen Rao was on finally, and you got to hear him speak. And I was like, you sound just like Fen Rao. And he was playing Fen Rao. It was also my first game ever playing against the Protectorates, so it was really memorable for me because I got to see kind of how they work. Like, I had it in my head, but I had never seen it on the table. But I think that game was probably the most fun, and like we joked back and forth, and it was cool. Everyone got to see like the PS0 crit and an epic play. I felt like that one was one of the best games to watch.
Oh, anytime a major explosion triggers, that's an exciting thing in X-Wing.
Oh, yeah.
All right, so last question's a bit tougher from Devin Monkhouse. The K-Wing has quite a range of options for maneuvering and with the slam and where it can drop, say, cluster mines.
You've seen the pictures people have done, right, Kevin, where they show all, like, from a starting position, all the potential maneuvers and slams and bomb drops a K-Wing can do, and it just covers a whole corner of a game mat within, like, range 3.
Now, obviously, Devin's asking, is this good for the health of the game for the K-Wing to have this range of options? Obviously, it's never that simple. There's rocks and ships in the way. Like, bombing's never that simple where you can just go everywhere. But do you think the K-Wing's range of bomb options is too good?
So the same question can be asked with, do you remember when they made Echo location charts and all the different locations Echo could be? And we thought, oh my gosh, the world's broken. Echo can do anything she wants whenever she wants and is unstoppable. So I'm going to say no. I don't think it's necessarily bad for the game. I think it's going to require players to play at a different level. It's going to raise the skill cap a little bit and the floor as well. It is terrifying, but I feel like if you've played a couple games with the K-Wing, you'll start to understand that, yes, you can go all these places, and yes, you could take that gamble, but that does not necessarily mean it's going to pay off. I laid, for example, in our regionals in Minnesota in January, I dropped 3 cluster mine sets on different Fen Raos in 3 different games with my Miranda. And he hit at least 2 of the tokens all 3 times and never took more than 1 damage from Sabine. And he rolled all blanks on their dice. So I took the gamble, hoping it would pay off, and I did not get rewarded for it. One of those games I won because Khorne was able to endgame. But I think people are starting to put more ships in their list, which also lowers the value of action bombs, because that's talking about action bombs specifically. And I think that also helps fight against, you know, when you're not putting as many points in a ship, suddenly if it gets blown up by bombs, it's less valuable and it's not as big of a deal. I also think we're going to start to see more turrets, which is also going to hurt K-Wings. And if they've slammed or Miranda has slammed, she's not shooting, she's not regenerating. It's certainly scary, and it's certainly something that we have to be very conscious of. And I think is something we have to watch to make sure it can't be abused. But I think where it is right now, it can be frustrating. Having played some games of Fen on the other side of the K-Wing, it can be frustrating, but it can be flown around, but it just puts more of the burden on you if you're really paranoid about it. The other thing I've learned too is, you know, you could just stick a lower pilot skill ship in front of whoever you're trying to protect so that they can't just drop bombs on you.
Right. The other option is stress Miranda.
Or that.
She has pretty terrible greens.
Oh yeah, the K-Wing, the worst thing in the world is stress. So, I mean, there are answers. I think we just have to adjust our play style. And I think you're going to see that at Worlds. I think there's going to be a lot of Mirandas. And I think those Miranda players are not prepared for the counters that are going to be coming.
Ion Torps, people.
Ion Torps.
That does it, right?
It would hit them and ion them, but I think a plasma torpedo is far scarier to a K-Wing. I mean, like, ion's still scary, but just ripping all their shields off and suddenly they're exposed to crits and everything, that's just terrible.
Put me down for ion torps.
Kevin, thank you so much for joining us. I think this was a really great conversation.
Yeah, it was good. It's good to be on again, and I'm looking forward to being on again after Worlds, maybe, if I do good again.
Only if you do good.
You can hold me to it.
Thanks, Kevin.
It's always a pleasure, Kevin. Thanks for joining us.
Bye, guys.
Thank you guys so much for listening to this episode of Radio TCX. If you like the show, please go onto facebook.com/radioTCX and like our Facebook page. It only takes a second and it really means a lot to us.
You can follow us on Twitter at Radio TCX Podcast. Right now you'll be keeping up with my weekly hawk struggles.
And if you really like the show, please consider going onto iTunes and leaving us a 5-star review along with a comment saying what you like about the show. The reviews are really important to us and they help us reach a wider audience when people see that a lot of people like our show. A big thank you to everyone who's already written a review for the podcast. We do really appreciate those. I've read every single one of them.
And if you want to support the show directly, please go on to patreon.com/radioTCX and become a supporter of the show today.
Again, guys, thank you for listening and we'll talk to you next week.